Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling into darkness. The Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Ladies and gentlemen, the strange thing that's in our neighborhood today, ladies and gentlemen, is homosexuality. But the thing about it, a lot of people don't think that's strange anymore. A lot of people are thinking that it's okay to be gay, that it's nothing strange about two men's laying down together, or two women's laying down together, and we're moving into transgender. How these men's are changing themselves to being women's, and women changing themselves to being men's, and folks don't think that that's strange no more. They think that they can improve on the creation of God. You know, God created them to be a man. God created them to be a woman. But they're saying that, oh, God made a mistake. I'm really a man. The woman is saying, I'm really a man. And I need to go on and identify with my feelings. Even though I'm born a woman, I feel like I'm a man, so I need to go on and get the surgery. And the man is saying, I've been feeling like I was a woman. I feel like I'm a woman, and so even though I was born a man, I feel like I'm a woman, and so I need to go on and be true to myself and go on and have the operation and go on and be transgender now. But a lot of folks is thinking that that's not strange. And one of the reason is, ladies and gentlemen, we don't know our Bible. We don't really know our Bible. But we got a good Bible scholar that's teaching us the Bible. See, the problem with church today is church done got to be an entertainment center. People are going to church to be entertained. No, you go to the movie theater, go to the zoo to be entertained. When you go to church, you ought to go there to get some Bible. Go there and get some truth. Find out what do God want with my life and out of my life. Find out the truth. And this guy here, this pastor, Pastor Vody Bauckham, he's helping us, ladies and gentlemen, with the truth. Now, he left off yesterday with a story from the show West Wing, where the president of the show, Martin Sheen, I believe, man, he just tore up this talk show lady. By going to the Old Testament scripture, quoting this, I guess we're supposed to stone a person for planting mixed seeds there in the garden, or for wearing mixed clothes, a wool and a silk and stuff like that. And man, he just destroyed that lady. And most homosexuals, they take a look at that and that show, and they use those same line of arguments, and people don't know what to do with it. But he's going to show you what to do with it. So I bagged the tape back just a little bit so you can hear for yourself.
This is very popular. Let me read this for you. This is from my most recent book, Expository Apologetics. In the second season of the TV show West Wing, the West Wing is about the presidency in the United States, the West Wing of the White House. President Bartlett's character, played by Martin Sheen, obliterates a famous radio talk show host who insists on calling homosexuality an abomination. The woman, based on a real radio personality, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, stands there speechless while the president exposes her hypocrisy in what is viewed by many on the left as a classic example of pro-homosexual defeat of the clobber passages. By the way, the clobber passages are those passages, those six passages that people use. So in the homosexual community, those are referred to as the clobber passages, those six verses that Matthew Vines deals with in his book. Here's the scene. Again, they're you know, in the Oval Office, and there's this, you know, gathering of people, and the president walks in, and this woman, who is just a crude woman, who's supposed to be, you know, Dr. Laura or whatever, and they make you see her as a crude woman because everybody else stands up when the president walks in. She doesn't. By the way, the president jumps on her for that after he crushes her with this argument. He says, I'm interested in selling my youngest daughter in slavery. He identifies her as the woman who's the radio and calls homosexuality an abomination. I'm interested in selling my daughter into slavery, as sanctioned in Exodus 21:7. She's a Georgetown sophomore, speaks fluent Italian, always cleans the table when it's her turn. What would be a good price for her? My chief of staff, Leo McGarity, insists on working on the Sabbath. Exodus 35:2 clearly says that he should be put to death. Am I morally obligated to kill him myself, or is it okay to call the police? Here's one that's really important, because we got a lot of sports fans in our town. Touching the skin of a dead pig makes one unclean, Leviticus 11:7. If they promise to wear gloves, can the Washington Redskins play football? Can Notre Dame? Can West Point? Does the whole town really have to be together to stone my brother John for planting different crops side by side? Can I burn my mother in a small family gathering for wearing garments made of two different threads? Think about these things, will you? This episode was a huge hit. Homosexual groups lauded it for its brilliance. Reliance on the why do you pick and choose attack gained much traction. Later in 2008, California was considering the controversial Proposition 8, which eventually passed, banning same-sex unions in California. By the way, that's been overturned now. Among the many efforts to rally people in favor of homosexual unions, several Hollywood stars, led by Jack Black, performed Proposition 8, the musical. In this short piece, Black played the part of Jesus, and again, the hypocritical use of the Levitical law was on full display. Examples like this are myriad. I could list dozens. However, I share these two because of how strategic they are. The first was an episode in a long-running hit television series. It went for 7 seasons. The second was in a campaign for what is arguably the most strategic legal battle in the history of the fight for same-sex marriage. These are far from obscure cultural references, nor were they debates in academia or in the political arena. This is ground zero, the front line for the battle in the marketplace of ideas. This is the perceived seat of power in this war. As such, there are at least 4 advantages to addressing this particular objection. Number one, the fact that these arguments against biblical truth were so public demonstrates the amount of credence that they're given. This happened on television. By the way, these two examples are not the only two examples. This happens on television a great deal. And there is nothing more researched than television. This is why people pay so much money to put their ads on particular television shows. And trust me, if this thing didn't have traction, it wouldn't be on these television shows. Second, the public and consistent nature of these attacks means they work. It means they work, and they do. I've actually seen it happen. I've watched Christians backed into corners on college campuses and other places with this same line of argumentation. Really? Really? Do you eat shrimp? Do you eat pork? Really? Do you do this? Do you do that? Why do you pick and choose? Thirdly, these attacks bring the fight to our front door by making a scriptural argument. This is hugely important, folks. People are actually entering into a Bible discussion with us voluntarily. Okay? Most of the time you can't get people to talk about the Bible, right? But on this homosexuality issue, you know, you bring up Leviticus 18, and all of a sudden, their eyes get bright, and they can't wait to just go at you on this, and they want to have a biblical discussion. That's what we want. We want a biblical discussion. This is an opportunity to have one. They start salivating because they think, oh, I got you now. I've seen this on the West Wing. I've seen this on this. I've seen this on that. I've tried it on my college campus. Christians don't know how to answer it. You're in trouble. Fourth, if we can answer this objection, we'll be prepared to deal with one of the most common obstacles facing modern apologists. Like a challenger who takes the champ's best shot early in a heavyweight fight and keeps coming forward, those who are able to withstand what the culture sees as a knockout blow to Bible-thumping Christians and do so with poise and relative ease will cause their assailants to pause and think twice before they throw another punch. So with that in mind, let's get into it. What I want to do is look at this passage in Leviticus 18 and just share with you how you can use this as a gospel opportunity. Because here's the deal. We don't want to just win the argument about homosexuality. That does not do anyone any good. I win an argument with you about homosexuality and we never get to the gospel. What have I accomplished? Absolutely nothing. When you stand before God, the question won't be, did you stop practicing homosexuality? Okay? What did you do with Jesus? All right? So we want to engage the battle on this front because it gives us a gospel opportunity. I'll explain that. So, Leviticus 18:22, you shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination. It is an abomination. You don't have to even quote the verse. You just use the word abomination, right? And all of a sudden, they realize, oh, that's Leviticus. You're talking about abominations. There are other things that the Bible talks about being abomination. And, you know, you eat shrimp and you do this and you do that. There are other abominations. Why? Why do you pick and choose? Ultimately, here is the argument. You are being a hypocrite. You're being a hypocrite. When this happens, here's step one. Step one. Knock them down off their moral high horse. That's step one. Knock them down off their moral high horse. How do we do this? By demonstrating that everyone picks and chooses. Everyone picks and chooses. What? Yeah. Everyone picks and chooses. They just picked and chose. And so I bring up this issue of abomination. They go, you pick and choose. You know, there's other stuff in the law that you do. Da, 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 da. So immediately they feel like they now have the moral high ground. But they don't. And we need to let them know that they don't. First of all, I may say something like, you know, I find it very interesting that right now what you're doing is you're accusing me of hypocrisy. And you're assuming that hypocrisy is a bad thing. I wonder, what worldview views hypocrisy as a bad thing? It wouldn't be the Christian worldview, would it? Because that would mean that you're using the Christian worldview that you say you don't believe in order to demonstrate that I'm being immoral and that I should do better, which makes no sense if you don't believe in the Christian worldview. There's problem number one. Here's problem number two. Problem number two, you also pick and choose. And you pick and choose from Leviticus. Oh, no, I don't. Well, yes, you do. For example, in Leviticus 19, verse 11, you shall not steal, you shall not deal falsely, you shall not lie to one another. Verse 13, you shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. Verse 15, you shall do no injustice in court. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. It's interesting because all of those things you believe are wrong as well, don't you? You believe it's wrong to steal. You believe it's wrong to lie. You believe it's wrong to do injustice in court. That's Leviticus 19. So here's what I want you to understand. You're calling me a hypocrite because I choose Leviticus 18:22 and some other things in Leviticus I don't. But the fact of the matter is, there are things in Leviticus that you hold to as well, and you don't hold to Leviticus 18:22. So let's just right now erase the whole idea of you being on the moral high ground, because you pick and choose just like I do. Well, no, I don't. Well, but yes, you do. I just demonstrated that you do. Yeah, I don't believe those things because they're in Leviticus. I just believe those things because everybody knows that they're... You weren't here before the Bible. Your worldview was shaped by it, whether you know it or not. The fact that you didn't know you pick and choose doesn't eliminate your hypocrisy. You pick and choose. You do so out of ignorance. We can both agree. But the fact of the matter is, you did not invent those things. They are biblical, and you hold to them because you grew up in a culture that holds to biblical truth. So let's just be honest here. You may not have known that you pick and choose, but you pick and choose. But here's the other thing. If you don't believe that the Bible is authoritative, you have the opportunity right here and right now to say that you no longer believe that lying is wrong, that robbing is wrong, and that doing injustice in court is wrong because you reject Leviticus and you want your morality to not be lined up with it. Ready to change? Then you've decided to pick and choose. You don't have the moral high ground. That's step number one. Here's step number two. Step number two is, there's a difference between your picking and choosing and my picking and choosing. You didn't even know that you were picking and choosing, which means that you also don't know why you're picking and choosing. I, on the other hand, do know why I pick and choose. You see, there's this thing called hermeneutics, and we use hermeneutics to interpret the Bible. And we use hermeneutics to do things like picking and choosing in the Old Testament law. I pick and choose because I understand that there are three different types of law. There's moral law, there's civil law, and there's ceremonial law. You see, I understand that the moral law, which is really based on the Decalogue, is that law that transcends time and culture. And that those are things that are true for all people in all places at all times. However, there is a civil law that God gave to Israel in the ancient Near East for them to function as a culture then and there. Those things cannot just be taken over from that culture to our own. Thirdly, there are ceremonial laws which taught Israel about its worship. Those things cannot just be brought over whole hog either. For example, the laws in Leviticus that relate to the temple, we couldn't do those things if we wanted to. But here's where it gets very interesting. Because I'm a Christian, I understand that Christ fulfilled those things in the ceremonial law. That he was our once for all sacrifice for sin. So that as a Christian, it would actually be an abomination for me to go and offer the sacrifice of a lamb or a bull or a goat when Christ died for sin once for all, the just for the unjust, in order that he might bring us back to God. So as a Christian, I am obligated to pick and choose because Christ fulfilled the law. Please notice, I've now gotten to the gospel in a Bible discussion that they initiated. See this? It's a wonderful thing. What do we find it really hard to do? We find it really hard to get to the gospel with people, right? They don't want to talk about that. We find it really hard to discuss the Bible with people. They don't want to talk about that. But on this particular issue, because they have learned that this is a very successful approach to dealing with Christians on homosexuality, you can get lost people to not just agree to talk with you about the Bible, but to initiate and push the conversation. You bring up homosexuality and abomination, and you're like, oh, really? Why you pick and choose? Because you da-da-da-da-da. It's wonderful. And it's interesting, you know? It's really interesting, because it's kind of, and it's almost unfair. It's almost unfair. I used the boxing analogy earlier, you know, about taking the champ's best shot. I'll use another boxing analogy here. You know, somebody who's got a really quick left hook, and they know my left is faster than his right. And if he throws his right, he's in trouble. But how? How can I make him throw his right? Here's how I can do it. I can take my hands from here to here. And he looks at me and he goes, ooh, that left hand is down low. I bet I can get him. But he doesn't know that what I'm thinking is, the minute you do it, you're toast. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're sort of bringing the Leviticus abomination thing, and they think we're coming like an innocent lamb to the slaughter. And they're going, oh, it's on. I got him. Because I'm going to go right at him. You're picking and choosing, and you eat shrimp, and you do this, and you do that, and you do the other, and then all of a sudden they go, how come he's not cowering in fear? Why is he smiling? Because you just invited me to engage in a Bible conversation with you, which is what I wanted you to do from the beginning, so thank you. Step one, get off your moral high horse. Because you pick and choose too. Step two. You don't know why you pick and choose. But I do. There's actually a method to my madness. I understand the laws. And I understand the kinds of laws that we have. Is it always easy to figure out? No, it's not always easy. But I have a principle that I use. Here's another thing. I also have the example of the New Testament. Turn with me, if you will, to 1 Timothy. First Timothy chapter 1. And look beginning in verse 9. Now we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully, understanding this, that the law is not laid down for the just, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and sinners, for the unholy, the profane, for those who strike their fathers and mother, for murderers, the sexually immoral, men who practice homosexuality, enslavers, liars, perjurers, and whatever else is contrary to sound doctrine, in accordance with the gospel of the glory of the blessed God with which I have been entrusted. By the way, of course, we don't have time to deal with all of this, but what Paul just did was actually list Commandments 1 through 9 in order. in order, and he says that they're in accordance with sound doctrine. Right there. So now I have the apostle basically instructing me about the appropriateness of applying the moral law as a Christian. But something else very interesting happened. He also applied the Decalogue to homosexuality. So the ban on homosexuality is consistent with the morality and ethics of the Ten Commandments. Not according to me, but according to the Apostle Paul. This goes back to what we talked about earlier. Remember what Matthew Vines did? Matthew Vines said, if you want to deal with homosexuality, there's only six passages in the whole Bible that you have to deal with. Just six. Well, the fact of the matter is, when you understand what Paul just did in this paragraph, what you realize is that according to the Apostle Paul, Decalogue itself prohibits homosexuality. Vines doesn't deal with this. Of course he wouldn't. So now what do we have? Now we have the New Testament actually doing the same thing and teaching me as a Christian how to do this same thing. Now, the last step is this, and this is a really important step. We end where we began. We begin by what? Huh? Knocking them off their moral high horse. You know where we end? Getting us off our own. See, what they think just happened is we just switched the moral argument. What they think just happened is that we just went, so you thought you were the moral one, I'm actually the moral one. Mm-mm, that's not where we end. That's not where we end. Here's where I end this argument. I end this argument by saying, you know why this is important to me? This is important to me because you're right about one thing. I am a hypocrite. I know that I am. I admit that I am. I'm a sinner in need of a savior. And left to my own devices, hypocrisy is the only thing that I would produce. So I don't know about you, but I am in desperate need of a moral standard that is outside of myself. Because if I don't have a moral standard outside of myself, my tendency is to always consider the things that I approve of to be the moral ones, and the things that I disapprove of to be the immoral ones. And I become a law unto myself. And the reason that I need to know what God says is righteous and what God says is unrighteous is because I am a hypocrite. I admit that. And it's because I admit that that I've been able to throw myself on God's mercy. It's because I admit that that I am able to trust in the finished work of Jesus Christ, who kept the whole law where I could not. And that was very important, because that means that he could impute to me his righteousness. He kept the whole law and he was righteous, and his righteousness has been imputed to me. But then beyond that, in his active obedience, there's his passive obedience. And in his passive obedience, he received in himself the penalty that I owed because of my unrighteousness. So now there's a double imputation. So my hypocrisy is cast on Christ, and his righteousness is cast on me. And I don't stand in front of you holier than thou. I stand in front of you washed clean by the blood of the Lamb, who laid down his life for sinners like me. And I trust him as my righteousness and my only hope to stand before God justified one day. And I did not engage in this conversation with you because I think I'm superior to you. I engaged in this conversation with you because I know that I'm not. And I'm just one beggar telling another beggar where I found bread. This is how we answer the question, why
right. Wow. That was Pastor Vody Bauckham. And he was talking about homosexuality, how to answer the question of why we pick and choose. All right. That's it for today. Thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.